Chapter 2. To avoid scaring the shit out of humanity, we broadcast ID codes and encrypted messages as soon as we jumped into orbit. UNEF Command would be watching the sky, and we knew our new Frankenship version of the Flying Dutchman looked very different from the last time we were at Earth, so we wanted to assure everyone we were not a hostile alien ship. We did not need to be hostile because there was plenty of hostility coming from our governments. At my urging, Skippy insisted part of the crew remain aboard the ship while the rest of us dropped down dirtside for debriefing. As captain, I remained aboard until all but the skeleton crew were left, plus the keepers. The keepers we captured while they were on their way to infect the population of Paradise, whether they knew about the deadly infection or not. Yeah, they got a hell of a shock when they looked out a viewport in the docking bay and saw the green and blue marble that is our home planet. Under orders from UNEF Command, they were not allowed to send messages, but they were given tablets and could query the internet, TV and radio, social media, all that. No way could any of them ignore the truth at this point. Even Chisholm, still recovering from the tough love Adams had given him, was shaken. He approached me and saluted as he and the other keepers were loading aboard the dropship I would be flying. "Colonel Bishop," his Adam's apple bobbed up and down as he swallowed hard. There was a tear forming at the corner of one eye. "It has become clear that I was wrong about everything, that I misjudged you. You are an honorable man." I wasn't having any of that shit. He wanted me to tell him it wasn't his fault, that he had done what he thought best. Fuck that. All I did was glare at him, not returning the salute. "No excuses," he shook his head. And that surprised me. "I have been a total goddamn moron, a traitor to humanity. If you can ever think of something I can do to make amends, please tell me. Otherwise, I won't bother you again." "Good idea," I responded lamely. "Colonel," he lowered his voice, "some of my men are suicide risks." Crap. I should have considered that getting slapped in the face with the reality of how badly they had screwed up might be too much for some of those willful idiots. "I'll notify the ground team at Wright Pat," I said, my mind racing through the dropship's cabin. We had cleared it of anything the keepers could use as a weapon, and there would be two guards wearing powered armor in the cabin, but we had not thought of removing items the keepers might use to harm themselves. Crap! All I could do was warn the guards to be wary of anyone seeking to provoke them into using lethal force. "What about you, Chisholm?"
"Me?
No. I'm an asshole, not a coward." He shook his head with grim determination. "If there is just one good thing I can do in this world, I'm sticking around to do it. Colonel, I assume we will not be allowed to contact our families? That is good. Some of my people..." He paused, his jaw working side to side. "These people will not be able to face meeting their loved ones. Not now. Probably not for a long time." "Chisholm, I do think you are an asshole, and I think you chose to betray your people rather than face up to a truth you didn't want to believe. That is a mark of a coward in my book. My real problem with you is the people you convinced to follow you. If there is any way you can make amends for that, well, damn it, you have to stick around to do it." He stiffened, drew himself up to attention, and snapped a crisp salute. "Colonel, that is more than I deserve. Vaya con Dios, sir." I flew into Wright-Patterson Air Force Base like I did the last time, and the fun began. At some point, maybe it was day 3 of me getting grilled, I said something like, in my defense. One of the guys handling the interrogation, I mean, the debriefing, looked at me like I was something he scraped off his shoe. "Sergeant, if you have to say, in my defense, you have already lost the argument." I had to admit he made a good point. The good news was I had been promoted to staff sergeant in my permanent army rank while I was gone. That was about the only good news. I won't bore you with the details of the 8 days I spent in windowless rooms enjoying the gracious hospitality at Wright Pat. Let's just say that UNEF Command, the U.S. Army, Department of Defense, and the United States government, all the way up to our new president, were upset about some little nitpicky aspects of our latest successful mission in which the Merry Band of Pirates had once again saved the world. Here's a tip for you. Saving the world is awesome the first time, great the second time, but then it gets expected that you will do incredible things. It's like the Apollo missions to the moon. The first moon landing was a nerve-wracking spectacle. The next one also had the attention of the world riveted to their TV screens, but by Apollo 13, Even though those guys took the same risks with the same astonishingly primitive equipment, people just expected they would land on the moon, collect a bunch of rocks, and fly home. The Apollo 13 crew, ironically, are famous because their oxygen tank exploded on the way to the moon, and the world watched anxiously as NASA worked miracles to get them home safely. So, saving the world again earned me a brief grudging thanks right before it turned into another ass-chewing. Anyway, people on Earth were upset about little stuff, like us having conducted three unauthorized missions to save the human population of Paradise. I protested that we had only saved Paradise twice, but the Brigadier General conducting that debriefing reminded me we had gone to Paradise once to reactivate the Mesa projectors, then again to plant fake Elder Goodies, and a third time to intercept the infected Keepers. I hadn't been counting the time we planted Elder Tech as a separate mission, but the U.S. government saw it differently. So, we had taken a huge risk on Paradise three times. It was not entirely clear what the authorities were most upset about, but the four items at the top of the list were, 1, starting an alien civil war, 2, my idiot, untrustworthy AI nearly getting killed by a computer worm because he was too stupid not to go poking his nose into dark, scary places, 3, our being gone for way longer than we were supposed to, and 4, screwing with wormholes in a way that attracted the attention and curiosity of immensely powerful aliens who are now coming to destroy our home planet. Is that it? 4 things? Let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yep, that's about it. There were plenty of other things, actually a very long list of other things, that UNEF Command was unhappy about, but the big 4 kind of overshadowed everything else. By the way, number 2 is definitely listed as my idiot AI. Anytime Skippy did something UNEF Command did not like, which was pretty much everything, the beer can was my problem. I tried pointing out the good news that Skippy could now share technology on a limited basis, and that humans could now fly our Frankenship by ourselves, and I was greatly disappointed by the reaction. We could not yet truly fly the ship on our own because Skippy was still working out the bugs with our new ship controller AI. Oh yeah, UNEF Command thought the beer can was dragging its feet about getting that task completed. The other good news about Skippy sharing technology was a big yawn, because Skippy had also told me there was no freaking way humanity could upgrade our technology to a useful level within our 60-year deadline. Less than 60 years. That didn't matter anyway, with a pair of Maxalt ships soon to be headed for Earth. Basically, during the endless debriefings during which I said the same things over and over to a rotating crew of Intel people who apparently had gotten together and decided to ask me the exact same set of questions, I mean, geez, we all could have saved time if after the first day, everyone who wanted info just watched the video from day one, you know? Where was I? Oh, yeah, so I gave the same answers over and over, the same stuff that was in my written report. I recounted all the amazing things the merry band of pirates had accomplished, but all the interrogators heard me say was, blah, 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 killer aliens are coming to Earth because I am a reckless fuck-up. Oh, also, even if by an incredible stroke of pure freaking luck we could somehow stop those two Maxalt ships, within 60 years, aliens will notice that Earth's wormhole is not fully dormant, and they will wonder who the hell has been using it, which, again, was my fault. And they kind of had a point I couldn't argue with. To make our news about the Maxalts even more super-duper wonderful, I had to tell the world's governments that other good news. It was like, listen, this is kind of a funny story. Within 60 years, aliens out there will notice our local wormhole is not really dormant, and they will be coming here to investigate. Oh yeah, and Skippy says there is no freaking way Earth's primitive industries can build even part of a single starship in 60 years, so really, the Maxalts coming here now will only hasten humanity's inevitable demise. And maybe it's better to just get it over with, right? Try selling that to people who already considered me woefully unqualified for command. One of my interrogators, a real army colonel, was somewhat sympathetic when he talked with me during lunch one day.
Bishop, I read your mission reports, all of them, starting with your escape from Paradise. The brass could forgive you being away longer than we planned. We all started getting panicked when you had been away 2 months longer than expected. But that is understandable given all the shit you went through. They can forgive you for getting the lizards into a civil war. From what I've read, the Kristang have an internal dust-up every 100 years or so, and the lizards already hate us about as much as they can. The beer can going on vacation is a problem. The brass expects you to keep the AI in line. You accomplished a lot, and we are grateful. but you also are responsible for the Maxalts sending ships to Earth. You do understand we can't let that go.
I do understand, sir.
In the military, we use the term OBE for overcome by events. All the good and even incredible accomplishments of the Merry Band of Pirates had been overcome by the knowledge that an aggressively hostile senior species was sending ships to our planet.
Good. Bishop, no way is UNEF going to let you command another mission. You might go back out as an advisor or something similar if you cooperate and keep your nose clean.
There was no point to me arguing about how I was being treated, because I agreed with the people who considered our last mission an overall disaster. Anything else would be like asking Abraham Lincoln's wife if she enjoyed the play, except for that last part. As rotten as my first week home was, I drew comfort from knowing that Hans Chotek was having an even more super-duper delightful time. We were able to talk on the phone once, and he sounded thoroughly miserable. Shockingly, his colleagues in the diplomatic community did not consider his planning and starting an alien civil war to be a sterling example of their profession. Go figure, huh? Hansi was not likely to be invited to any swanky dinner parties for a while. It made me happy that he... No? Damn it, it did not make me happy to hear he was miserable. It should have made me happy, but it didn't. Truth is, we had kind of rubbed the rough edges off each other and developed a good working relationship. During debriefings, I found myself actually defending the guy, pointing out that he had been right about a lot of stuff I disagreed with at the time. Most importantly, before we jumped into the Theranan planet we called Bravo, he had insisted we perform a recon jump. I wanted to jump right into orbit so we could get in and out fast as possible. If I had gotten my way, the Dutchman would have been trapped by a damping field near Bravo and sliced apart, or seized by a Theranan task force that was waiting for us. The Merry Band of Pirates owed our lives to Hans Chotek, and I learned new respect for his calm judgment. I hoped he was saying good things about me, too. No offense to the United States Air Force, but being at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base again sucked even more than it had the last time. Before I could ask, Skippy gleefully told me that Rachel, the woman I met during my last luxury vacation at Wright-Pat, was now living in San Diego and she had a steady boyfriend. No, I was not expecting to hook up with her, but talking with her over a cup of coffee would have been nice. My Z-phone had been confiscated, and that sucked, because while the Army allowed me to talk with my parents, and I briefly talked with my sister and a couple friends, the calls were awkward, because I knew someone was listening in. At the end of 8 days, the Army sent me home on leave for 2 weeks, with instructions not to go anywhere without reporting my plans, and a warning they might recall me at any time to answer questions. The government also showed how much they cared about me by sending a security team of feds to follow me everywhere I went. Apparently, one qualification for being assigned to a security detail is a complete lack of humor, because those people were incapable of cracking a smile. With the veil of secrecy about the Merry Band of Pirates breaking down as it inevitably had to, my little hometown was crowded with reporters looking for a story and people who were just curious or who hoped I had news of their loved ones on Paradise. There were also the usual conspiracy theory wackos. They were really scary. I won't bother telling you some of the truly wackadoodle ideas about me floating around on social media. Both ends of the road to my parents' house were blocked, at first by black SUVs with unsmiling guys who politely but firmly made people turn their cars around unless they lived on that road. Then some group of drooling morons tried to go around the barricade of SUVs with their jacked-up Jeep, and when they skidded in the mud and hit a tree, they got into a brief firefight with the security team. The nutcases had AKs, but the security team tossed a grenade into the Jeep and ended that nonsense real quick. After another incident where a group of people tried sneaking through the woods behind my parents' house, the SUVs were replaced by Strikers equipped with 30mm cannons and a non-lethal crowd control weapon that used some sort of microwave or electrical beam that made the target's skin feel like it was on fire. In a gesture that got me choked up, security in the 2-mile perimeter around my parents' house was provided by the 10th Infantry Division, my old outfit. Not all the soldiers assigned to the detail knew the real story about the Merry Band of Pirates, but they did all know I was a former mountain soldier, and they were all determined not to take any shit from crazies. After a fire team subdued one group of nutcase trespassers with, how about I call it, persuasive non-lethal force, things quieted down. I guess TV images of people being carried out of the woods on stretches tended to discourage all but the most hardcore Looney Tunes. 2 days after I got home, I drove into the next town to get some groceries for dinner. Technically, I did not drive. What I did was request to go into town, then wait for the security detail to clear that idea with their superiors. Then they drove, with me sitting in the back seat of a black SUV, between two guys who had not been trained in the art of conversation. I was not a prisoner. No way. I could not go anywhere without asking permission, and I had to be escorted any time I left my parents' property. And I was not allowed to use a Z-phone so the government could listen to all my conversations, but I was not a prisoner. I know that because the security detail told me I definitely was not a prisoner. That was good, because before they told me, it sure felt like I was a prisoner. At the grocery store, a woman in the produce aisle looked up from squeezing the unripe tomatoes to glance at me and my handlers. She looked back at the tomatoes, then her head snapped back to me, staring at my face, her eyes narrowing. I knew that look. She was trying to decide whether she recognized me. Being out of uniform helped a bit to make me anonymous, plus I was wearing an old baseball cap. However, it was hard to be inconspicuous with four guards in dark suits escorting me. We don't see a whole lot of dark suits and ties in my part of Maine, so they really stuck out. Plus, they were all wearing earpieces with the curly cords hanging down into their collars. The security guys behind me tensed as the woman dropped a basket and strode toward me, with me waving the guys away. Did I recognize her? The population of our county is small, but a lot of people move to rural areas when the cities emptied out after Columbus Day. She did not look familiar. I smiled at her anyway. She wasn't smiling. "I saw you on TV," she declared in an unfriendly tone, her face red. "You were on that alien ship."
Yes, ma'am, I groaned to myself.
The government had mostly kept the media away from me other than two carefully scripted interviews at Wright Pat. Senior officers like Sims, who were more trusted, had to do a lot of TV interviews given the official cover story. The cover story about the merry band of pirates being passengers on a Theranan ship for a training mission was running thin. Most people at Wright Pat knew the truth, and rumors were rampant on social media. The truth was out there, and it would be revealed soon. The world's governments could not keep such a big secret forever. The keepers we brought back were being held somewhere. All I know is they were marched away from my dropship when I landed us at Wright Pat. I was aboard the ship. We were training for...
For what? She glared at me. You aren't doing anything up there. My boy went to that planet paradise and he is stuck there forever, and you people aren't doing anything to bring him home.
Ah, shit. I couldn't say we had been to paradise. I couldn't even tell her we had communication with that planet. And the government had a cover story for that also.
Paradise is enemy territory controlled by the Ruhar and their allies, ma'am, I said softly. We can't go there. I'm sorry.
The Theranan brought you out there and abandoned you?
She was wringing her hands in front of her chin with anguish, tears forming in her eyes.
Your son, what's his name?
Gary Dell. He is with the 3rd Infantry.
I was with the 10th Infantry, I pointed to myself. I'm sorry, I don't know him. We left Paradise before the Hamsters took it back. It was supposed to be a quick training mission, and I balled my fists to show my own anger. We never got back. We, the crew, all of us, have been with the Theranan, because if there is any chance we can get back to Paradise, any chance at all, we don't want to wait. We want to be out there, ready to go at any moment.
The Theranan are powerful. That's what the government tells us. They can't even get a message from Paradise.
The ship up there is a star carrier. It's basically a big truck, ma'am.
Mary Dell.
She dabbed at her eyes with a handkerchief.
Ms. Dell, the ship, I pointed to the ceiling, isn't a warship. It's just a space truck. It can't go deep into hostile star systems or it would risk getting trapped. Something about the gravity well. I gave her a dopey smile. The Ruhar are jamming signals from the planet. The Kristang, who are trapped there with our people, can't get a message out either. All we know is the Ruhar have set aside an area of paradise for humans, and our people there are growing their own food.
You were there? On paradise?
I landed in the second wave. I nodded.
Ms. Dell, I wish I knew your son, Gary. He must have been. She sobbed, and her knees slumped, and I caught her, holding her and patting her back. My eyes welled up with tears, too. And we stood there in the produce aisle, two strangers comforting each other. It sucked that I couldn't tell her the truth. But maybe it was a blessing also. Would she prefer to hear that we had the means to bring her son home, but we couldn't risk exposing our secret? If I had a loved one on Paradise, I would hate to hear that. Better to think we couldn't do it than that we wouldn't do it. That night, I felt something hard and flat under my pillow when I went to bed. It was a Z-phone with a text message flashing, "Put in the earpiece." So I took the tiny earpiece that was taped to it and wriggled into my ear. "How you doing up there, Skippy?" I whispered with my head under a pillow. "Ah, okay, Joe. You can talk safely now. I disabled the microphones in your bedroom. The feds planted bugs in my old room. All over the house, actually. Plus, some in the trees outside, in your parents' cars, all over. There are cameras and motion detectors covering the property and the adjacent homes. God damn it. They're listening to everything we say. Even my parents? Well, they think they are listening, but a beer can I know hacked into their comms immediately. Anything you or your family say that is sensitive, I intercept and replace with something boring. The feds never know they're not hearing the real deal." "Good. Thank you. Joe, I have some good news. The woman who confronted you in the grocery store today..." "It's not her fault, Skippy. She's right. We aren't doing anything to bring our people home. I can't tell her why. That's what sucks. If this helps, I searched through the Ruha database about humans on Paradise. Gary Dell has left the 3rd Division. He is a civilian now. He's a farmer and part owner of a boat that brings cargo up and down a river to the seacoast. Compared to most guys on Paradise, he is doing reasonably well. Although if Mary Dell is hoping for grandchildren, she will be quite disappointed. Gary is not married, and I don't have any record of a steady relationship with a woman. There are not a lot of women on Paradise, Skippy. I wish Gary the best of luck. Thanks, that was good to hear. It would really suck if her son was dead out there." "Yeah, I guess so." The tone of his voice didn't sound like the usual asshole. "You sound bummed out. What's wrong?" "Ah, I started a business venture, and now it looks like a failure right from the start." What? You started a business? How did you start a business? You're a beer can." "Oh, I have lawyers handling everything for me. The business is registered under the name Magnus Skipton in the Cayman Islands." "Hey, get it? Magnus Skipton? Magnificent Skippy?" "Yeah, that's very clever. Pray tell, why did you start a business? I'm trying to go legit, because you whine so much about me stealing money from mob-controlled banks and ripping off casinos. Allegedly doing those things, remember?" I lifted the pillow to make sure no one was watching me and listening. "Oh, yeah, totally. As if I would leave any evidence behind. What was this business? I had no idea what kind of business a beer can would find interesting. The first rule of business is you find a need and fill it, right? Aboard the Dutchman, I noticed people, especially women, used lots of lip balms like Chapstick, because the air inside dropships and spacesuits is dry. That ranger, Lauren Poole, was unhappy when she ran out of the cherry flavor. She only brought enough for 6 months, but our mission lasted, you know, a lot longer." "Your business isn't, selling chapsticks aboard the ship, is it?" "There were only a couple people acting as a skeleton crew, although I heard UNEF Command wanted to start sending technicians and scientists up there to restock supplies and make repairs ASAP. No, although... Let me make a note of that for later. Yeah, I could use one of the cargo bays as Skippy's Emporium or Skippy Mart. I could sell all kinds of stuff people need, like ammo, spare parts for weapons." "That is a great idea." "No, that is a terrible idea. What is this business you had?" "Have, Joe. It's not dead yet. I bought a company that makes lip balms, and..." "Where did you get the money to buy a company?" "Oh, forget it. I don't want to know." "Probably a good idea. So, I bought this business, and I thought, hey, there are lots of lip balms on the market, right? Mine need to be different." "I am afraid to ask, but different how?" "The flavors, Joe. Everybody has cherry and mint and other boring flavors like that."
"And you made which flavors? Like banana?"
"No, I should have tried banana. Monkeys do love bananas."
"We do."
"Instead, I made stuff like garlic, onion, and jalapeno cheddar flavors."
Under the pillow, I had to put my hand over my mouth to stifle my laughter. You didn't foresee any problems with those flavors?
No! People love those flavors for stuff like nachos and pizza. Humans love nachos and pizza. Now I have a warehouse full of chapsticks I can't sell. Stupid monkeys.
Clearly, the whole thing is the fault of monkeys. Sometimes flavors can be, like, contextual. I wasn't sure if that was the right word. I mean, onions are good on pizza and burgers, but not in ice cream, you know?
Great, now you tell me.
Well, I'm shipping the cabbage flavor ones to Eastern Europe. Hopefully I can sell them there, unless you have a better idea.
Cabbage flavor?
Skippy, I think your only hope is if somehow those flavors become some ironic cool thing with hipsters.
How would I do that?
I'm not an ironic hipster, so, I'd have to guess. Make them think your stuff is so uncool that it's cool. Try to start a trend on Facebook or something.
Ooh, yeah, I can use all the psychobabble crap I learned about how to understand monkeys.
Right, because manipulating people would be bad.
Really?
I mean, yes, of course.
Well,
this time I stifled a yawn.
Good luck with that, Skippy.
I had a long day. I'm going to get some rack time. Talk with you in the morning?
Sure thing, Joe. I'll be busy doing research about marketing up here.
Hey, better hide that Z-phone so the prison guards don't see it.
The next morning, I was washing up breakfast dishes after my parents had gone to work when I felt a vibration from my Z-phone. Before taking it out of a pocket, I went down the steps into the basement and looked at the screen. There was a text message from Adams.
Can you talk?
Could I talk? Hell yes.
My hand holding the phone was shaking. It surprised me how eager I was to talk with her, and how nervous I was about it.
Skippy, am I clear to talk with Adams?
Go ahead, Joe. There are three listening devices planted in the basement, but I've got you covered.
Great.
I want to talk privately, understood? Not even you listening. If I need to contact you, I'll send a text.
Sure thing.
I can trust you on this?
Joe, I am at heart a supreme asshole, but I would not risk Margaret getting upset at me.
Signing off now.
My parents' basement was unfinished. The furnace and water heater were down there, plus they used it for storage. Just after Columbus Day, when people moved out of the cities due to lack of electricity, and my parents took in refugees, the basement was crowded with furniture from upstairs rooms that had been converted into bedrooms. My father had built shelves to store food provided by the government, and at one point a teenage boy had been living down there to get some measure of privacy. Now the place was mostly empty, a few boxes and tins of leftover food, plus all the vegetables and fruit my mother canned from her garden. I sat down on an empty crate and popped open a jar of blackberry jam.
Call me, I texted to Adams.
The phone flashed immediately.
How are you doing, sir? She asked.
My first reaction was a sigh, which was not a good move. Signaling you are frustrated is not the best way to begin a conversation.
Sorry. It's been a rough couple weeks. Can you not call me sir, please? I'm a staff sergeant now that we're Dirtside.
We both know that will change soon. The Mac Sulks are coming, so you know we're going back out. How about we compromise and pretend sir is a nickname?
Depends. The ship is probably going back out. I don't know if we will be invited.
Can I call you Marge or Margaret?
Silence was the only response, so I tried again.
Okay, how about we pretend your nickname is Adams?
That's better.
When did they release you from Wright Pat?
We chatted for a while about our debriefings, which we both called interrogations because that's what they were. Adams had been held at Wright Pat for only 2 days before they flew her to Quantico because the Marine Corps wanted to debrief her. The Army had come to Wright Pat to talk with me, so I guess I got lucky there. Except the Marines had been more interested in learning from her than bitching at her, while my experience had been all bitching, all the time.
You got your Z-phone from Skippy? I asked.
Yes, he told me one of his bots snuck it into the house. I don't know how he did it.
You have security people watching you?
Two teams, I reported.
One of them got an earful from my mother when their RV command post went too far off the road and ran over the flower bed near the mailbox.
I'm lucky then. All I have here is two Marines and they're keeping their distance.
Sir, Skippy found listening bugs in the house here.
And they bugged this house too. My parents' cars too. That pissed me off. They don't trust us.
At Quantico, a brigadier told me scuttlebutt is when the Dutchman goes out again. Her mission might be to contact the Giraffe, try to make a deal with the Rindaloo.
I don't know if the UN is serious about that or just kicking ideas around.
I was afraid of that. People at Right Pat were talking about that strategy, and they didn't want to hear when I told them it was a bad idea.
It's a totally bullshit idea, she agreed. 2 Maxalt ships coming here has them in a panic.
It has me scared out of my mind, too, I admitted. Contacting the Giraptha is an awful idea, but it may be the best we've got. No way can the Dutchman take on a pair of Maxalt's cruisers.
Don't say that. We've been in situations worse than this.
No, we haven't. We have gone up against AA or AAA ball clubs like the Gristang and Theranen, and we got lucky a lot. The Maxalts are the major leagues. All we have is a beat-up space truck and a beer can.
And monkeys. We are clever, remember?
Yeah.
What's wrong, sir? This isn't like you.
That remark almost got me angry. Adams, this is me. The real me. I fake it a lot in front of the crew.
Everyone fakes it part of the time.
What's wrong? Before answering, I looked at the phone. Did I want to have this conversation with someone? Yes. I needed to talk about it. And I wanted to talk about it with her more than anyone else. But I wished our relationship was different. It was hard pouring my heart out to someone who always called me sir. Oh, what the hell. Adams and I had been through a lot together. Maybe no one else could understand. What's wrong this time? This is all my fault. The Maxalts are coming here because I asked Skippy to screw with wormholes without considering the consequences. I may have killed us all. This is my fault.
Maybe it is.
What?
You expected me to pat your head and tell you it's not your fault?
She scolded me.
Maybe it is your fault. From what I remember, you have done a lot of stupid shit, sir.
Remind me never to ask you for a pep talk, Gunny.
You don't need a pep talk. You need to man up and fix the problem. If you fuck this up, you need to fix it. Not indulge in weepy moping on the goddamn phone, sir. I'll tell you what I know. Without you, the crew would already be dead, and Earth would be doomed for sure. The beer can screwing with wormholes is how we got around the galaxy fast enough to complete our missions, so we had to do it. We didn't have a choice at the time. Think about this. The Maxalts were coming here eventually anyway. We know the senior species were alarmed when the wormhole near Earth shut down. That is behavior they hadn't seen a wormhole exhibit before. We were on the clock as soon as Skippy shut down that wormhole the first time. It took me a moment to process that. Can I indulge in weepy moping for another few minutes before we have to dream up a plan to save the freaking world again? Yes, she laughed. As long as those minutes are tonight while you're asleep. Fair enough. I guess UNEF Command will have to listen to us whether they want to or not. They'll need us and Skippy to fly out there if they want to contact the Giraptha. Not anymore they don't. Remember? We screwed ourselves. Skippy fixed it so we monkeys can fly this ship on our own without him.
Shit! I slapped my forehead. There were still a few bugs he was working out when we arrived at Earth, but he might have fixed them by now. Ah, crap. They don't even need Skippy to use the magic beanstalk. We did screw ourselves. At my request, Skippy had cobbled together some parts hooked to our Elder Wormhole controller module, so if something had happened to him, we could use it to reopen the dormant wormhole and get back home to Earth. The device was a one-time use item, as it would burn out and lose its connection to higher space-time. The intention of the device was so the Flying Dutchman could fly through the wormhole inbound, but UNEF Command could also use it outbound to get to an area where they could contact the Giraptha. This is a pleasant conversation.
We can change the subject, she suggested. How are your folks?
We chatted about our families, friends we had seen since we got back, domestic stuff like that. The conversation went on long enough that I ate half the jar of jam with my fingers and wished I had brought a cup of coffee. Somehow the conversation got onto my experience in the grocery store with the woman who wanted me to bring her son back from paradise.
I feel for her, Adams said after a pause. I can't imagine what that is like.
It may be worse for us.
Sir, how's that?
We know why UNEF is really trapped on paradise. We could do something about it, but we won't.
No, we can't do anything about it.
Adams, we chose not to bring our troops home. It's the only rational choice, but it is a choice.
Damn it.
If the Dutchman's next mission is to throw ourselves at the feet of the Giraptha and beg for mercy, we should go to Paradise first, let those people know they have not been abandoned, not been forgotten. We can't let that happen. She had me confused.
Can't let them be forgotten?
No. We can't let the Dutchman's next flight to be for surrendering to the enemy, or surrendering to friends. We don't have any friends out there.
You got that right.
Sir, I have to go. I'm meeting friends for lunch.
Yeah.
Hey, my folks are planning to take some time off next week, and my sister, too. We are thinking of going down to the coast or camping or something. My sister had never been a fan of camping, so I doubted that would be part of our plans.
Now, whatever we do, I gotta get it cleared with the security team first.
Okay, I'll talk to you later. When I got back up into the kitchen, I saw two of the security guys in dark blue jackets had gotten out of their trailer in the driveway and were looking toward the kitchen windows at me. What I felt like doing was flipping them off, but I knew they were only doing their job, so I gave them a friendly gesture with a coffee mug. One of them looked like he was trying not to laugh, while the other guy's face was red.
"Hey, Skippy," I called softly after turning away from the window.
I was in the basement for a long time. They must have been listening.
What fake sounds did you play for them?
Oh, I didn't know how long you would be talking with Margaret, so at first I made it sound like you were sorting jars on the shelves, sweeping the floor, boring stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
I glanced back at the window where the red-faced guy was climbing back in the trailer with a disgusted look, and the other guy's shoulders were shaking.
What did you do after that?
Well, I had to think of something plausible you might be doing down there for so long, by yourself.
Ah, crap.
The feds are monitoring internet traffic through your router, and I made it look like you were surfing for porn.
I facepalmed myself.
Please tell me you didn't. Don't worry, Joe. I didn't use any of that weird stuff you've browsed before, just your typical generic porn. You know, like horny housewives or...
I am praying the Maxulks arrive here right now and nuke this site from orbit.
Well, the feds sure got a chuckle out of it, except one of them is a devout Mormon. He was praying for your soul. Especially after I played, like, moaning and grunting and slapping sounds over the listening bugs.
Hey, to make it look more convincing, you should walk around with that goofy, satisfied look on your face.
Skippy, I'm going to fill the bathtub, plug in a toaster, and jump in with it.